Well, this is the series on the Goswamis of Vrindavan. Well, 2 weeks ago, Sri Lokanath, and last week, Sanatan. Actually, Lokanath is not considered one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. But Sanatan is, as well as his brother Rupa. So we'll finish two. Next week, I have two together, Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta. And then we'll finish up with Raghunath Das and Jiva Goswami. 2 weeks from tonight. So this one's on Rupa, and of course, he's the brother of Sanatan. They were both named Amar and Santosh Dev, respectively the Prime Minister and Finance Minister of Hussein Shah of Bengal. They'd written to Lord Chaitanya to deliver him. Lord Chaitanya went out of his way on his way to Vrindavan. He made a big detour to go to their home in Ramakeli and give them mercy. And of the two, Rupa Goswami was the one that left the service of the Hussein Shah first. That's why he had less trouble. You remember last week, Sanatan was jailed, and the Shah, Hussein did not accept his resignation. Rupa didn't bother to give a resignation. He just left, and so he got away scot-free. It was a little stickier for Sanatan, but by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, they both extricated themselves from the service of the Hussein and joined his mission in Vrindavan. What precipitated Rupa Goswami's departure was, on one stormy night, he was in his home, and it was windy and rainy, and you know, hurricane speed winds, and the messenger from the Shah came and said, "The Shah wants to see you." And Rupa Goswami says, "A night like this, are you kidding? He wants to see you right away." So Rupa Goswami started fighting his way through the storm and the wind and all. And he came past the window of a washerwoman who was looking out her window, and she saw him as a shadowy figure making his way through the storm and the clouds and the rain and all. And she said, Lord, you know, there's someone out there. There's someone out there, you know, someone crazy enough to be out there." And her husband said, "Who is it?" She says, "I can't make him out, Clem, but who could be out on this kind of a night except a dog, a thief, a slave, or a slave of the king?" And then when Rupa Goswami heard that, a dog, a thief, or the slave of the king. So then Rupa Goswami realized that he was basically a slave of the king. He was the dog of the king. He had a golden collar. You can have a collar made of iron or a collar of gold, but you're still a dog and you're at the beck and call of your master. And he also realized he's a thief because the life, the talents and abilities which God had given him, he wasn't using them in his service. He was using them in the service of some mundane personality. And he actually took that woman as Yoga Maya. He actually took that washerwoman as a mouthpiece for God himself, saying it's time to get out. And so he left the service of the Shah and he got off scot-free. He's famous because he was the finance minister and he had a lot of wealth, not ill-gotten wealth, but honestly earned wealth, because the Hussein had given up the entire running of the kingdom to the two brothers, and he was just off hunting and stuff. So Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada says he distributed his wealth ideally. In preparation for departure and for his own renunciation, he gave 25% to his family members. He put 25% with a reliable person, like in a bank, for emergencies, and then he gave 50% away for temples and for spreading Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said that was ideal. 25%, 25%, and 50%. And then he met Lord Chaitanya at Prayag. He went to Vrindavan, and then he came back, and on the way back, I think he was going to Jagannathpur, he met Lord Chaitanya it was probably Lord Chaitanya who was returning from Vrindavan, and then he crossed paths with Rupa Goswami. And at that time, Rupa Goswami, who was a poet, he was an incredible poet, and he spoke these words of Lord Chaitanya: "Namo Maha Bharanaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namani Kaurat Sveya Namaha." He says, "You incarnate many times in different forms, like fish incarnation, turtle incarnation, lion incarnation. But of all the different incarnations that you've exhibited, this is the most merciful. This is the greatest, because for every other incarnation, people had to qualify themselves. They had to do something to become Krishna conscious. you're the greatest and the most merciful because people don't have to be qualified. You've come in the Kali Yuga when nobody's qualified and you've given them the elixir of the holy name. All they have to do is take it. And if they just take it, they'll become qualified just in the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And he said, never before has such mercy been so freely available to people who are otherwise unqualified for it. And in those 10 days in Prayag, at a place called the Dash Ashwamedha Ghat, a bathing place, Lord Chaitanya brought Rupa Goswami there every day for 10 days and instructed him. Remember, he had instructed Sanatana Goswami. Actually, this was later in chronological time. He instructed Sanatana Goswami for 1 month. But he instructed Rupa Goswami and his brother Anupam for 10 days. And they proceeded onwards on their journey, presumably to Vrindavan. And Anupa passed away shortly thereafter. Lord Chaitanya explained to Rupa Goswami the seed, the creeper of bhakti, and he explained the sequence by which the seed fructifies, becomes a creeper. The creeper entwines itself, rises and rises and rises through the material worlds, that creeper of bhakti, just like a creeper will climb. You know, those creepers climb, 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 climb as far as they can go. And the creeper of bhakti, of devotional service, of love of God, it climbs past the upper planets of this material world, past all the other material universes. It reaches the outer limits of the material world. It punctures through into the spiritual sky, continues to climb up past the Narayan planets and the Vaikuntha world, and it finally grabs hold at the lotus feet of Krishna. And the sequence is described in a famous Ado Shada Tato Sarasang Tato Bhajanakriya Tato Narta Navitisha Tato Nishta Ruchishtata Tasha Tishtata Bhavas Premabhirantana. It starts with a little bit of faith. Like, who are these Hare Krishnas? What are they doing? Why are they chanting? Let me go and find out more. And when you do that, you associate with them. And you realize how nectarine and non-sectarian the practice of Krishna consciousness is. And in the association of devotees who don't smoke, who don't drink, who don't eat meat, who don't elicit sex, you lose your taste for all of those things. Gradually they fall by the wayside. And at some point in time, one aspires for initiation. One takes initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. After that, then one is benedicted with attachment, atashaktash, and then ruchi, which is called a taste for chanting the holy name. At this point, one can no more live without chanting the holy name and without the association of devotees than a fish can live without water. And that's just the preliminary stage before bhava, ecstasy, ecstatic emotions, and then finally prema, Krishna prema. So one's of a devotional creeper proceeds through all those various stages, beginning with a little bit of faith and ending with the full fruit of love of God. In Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami, he went to Vrindavan and then he went back to Puri. When he went to Vrindavan, a personality named Subhuti Roy took him around and showed him all the 12 forests in Vrindavan. And apparently Sanatan had left Vrindavan to go to Puri, and then Rupa turned around and he went to meet Sanatan at Kasi, but Sanatan had already been to Puri, and he was already going back. In those days, he didn't have texting, emails, instant messaging, so people could, you know, miss each other very, very easily. And so they missed each other, and Rupa Goswami just continued on to Nilachala, which is called Jagannath Puri. And because he had associated with the Muslims and served them, he considered, I don't even know if the society considered him outcast per se, but in his humility, he considered himself unfit to enter the temple. And so he lived with Haridas Thakur in the little hut. And they got the darshan from a distance by seeing the chakra on the top of the temple. And Lord Chaitanya used to come and visit him every day. And one time, Lord Chaitanya, Rupa Goswami had written a couple of verses, and Lord Chaitanya found one of them written on a palm leaf in one of the tiles at the top of the thatched hut. And he read it, and he went into ecstasy. Vairagya vidya nidya bhakti no shikshartam eka purushaparanam Sri Krishna Chaitanya dari kripambudir yasta maham prabhadye. It says that the Supreme Lord, Vairagya vidya nidya bhakti yogina, the Lord has come to give knowledge, vidya, and detachment, vairagya, vidya, nidya, bhakti, shikshartam eka purusha pranam. Even though he's God, even though he's the oldest and the supreme person, he's so kindly come down. Prabhupada gives the example that sometimes when a teacher wants to teach a student writing, the teacher will wedge himself into that little tiny desk and take the student's hand and start writing. It's not that the teacher's practicing her writing or learning writing, but they already are adept at it, but they're coming down to the level in order to teach. So the Supreme Lord, Shikshartam, Shiksha means a teacher, Artam, to give this great benediction, has come down from the spiritual world. So, Viragavidini Shikshartam Eka Purushava, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Saridadari, in the form, in the golden form of Sri Krishna, Kripambudu Yasta Mahan Pachade, I surrender to that magnanimous Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So not only did Lord Chaitanya love the poetry of Rupa Goswami, but he also said at one point in time that the handwriting of Rupa Goswami is just like rows of pearls. He wrote dramas and poetry. Some of the dramas he wrote were called Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava. He was an expert on ras, on the loving relationships between Krishna and his devotees. In Vrindavan, he associated principally with Shroop Damodar and Ramananda Roy. Remember, Shroop Damodar is the personal servant of Lord Chaitanya. And so Rupa Goswami is associating with someone who himself associates with Lord Chaitanya himself. Another verse that Lord Rupa Goswami wrote was Tande Tandavini Ratam Bitanuta Tandavali Labje. He said, Lord, you've only given me two ears and one tongue with which to chant the holy names of the Lord. But when I rub those two syllables, Krishna, together, when I rub them together, a nectar, just like when you have water and a stick of sandalwood and you rub it on a rough surface, you get this wonderful sandalwood pulp, which is so cooling and refreshing, especially on a hot day. So Rupa Goswami said, when I rub those two syllables, Krishna, around in my mouth, it creates an indescribable pleasure. And one mouth and two ears are not sufficient. He said, even if I had thousands of mouths and hundreds of thousands of ears, I would never reach the end of the nectar which is generated by those two syllables of Krishna and Rama. So after 10 months in Puri, Rupa Goswami returned to Vrindavan in 1519, finally hooked up with his brother, and they both started writing, excavating the holy places of Krishna, and engaging in intense bhajan. Rupa Goswami particularly liked to receive and host and settle in arriving devotees. Lots and lots of devotees were coming from Bengal to Vrindavan, and Rupa Goswami would greet them and make arrangements for their settlement. Now, the Rupa Goswami wanted to find this one particular famous Govindaji deity. This Govindadev deity was worshipped by Krishna's grandson, Brajanabha, but was lost in due course of time and for many, many centuries because the Muslims went and smashed the temples, and so the deities had to be hidden. And it was rumored that this particular deity was buried for its own safety in an area called Yoga Peet. But Rupa couldn't find it. He just went everywhere in the area and he couldn't find it. And one day, while he was looking, one boy came, who quite possibly could have been Krishna, and told him that in this area there's a place called Goma Tila. Goma Tila. Go means cow. Mata means mother, and Tila means there's a place where this cow comes every day, and her milk bag is so full that the milk comes out of her bag and it pours on the ground. And he said, and then Rupa Goswami, that's it. That the cow every day it makes her offering of milk. So then he dug there and he found the Govinda deity. And of that Govinda deity, Rupa Goswami writes so much poetry. He was a poet. And here's another verse. Shmeran Bangi Triapajitam Krishna Varni Chandram. I can't remember the whole thing. But it says, if you are attached to family, friends, and country, do not go to see Govinda standing on the bank of the Yamuna in the moonlight, playing his flute, posing in a threefold bending way with a smile on his face. Because he will steal your heart away from all mundane things. Do not. Of course, it's a literary technique to say, don't do this, when in actual fact you want them to do that. It's the highest perfection. So he says, if you value family, friendship, and love, then don't do this. Because Krishna will be so attractive, he will cause you to lose your taste for those things. And devotees who have a higher taste don't naturally abandon any of their mundane duties, but they In fact, they keep to their mundane duties even more carefully and scrupulously, but their heart is with Krishna. Their heart is with Krishna. Being inspired by Rupa Goswami, Emperor Mansingh, the great Rajasthani king, built a temple for this Govindaji deity that he'd found. Mansingh was actually a disciple of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, but he was inspired by Rupa Goswami to build the Govindaji temple. It took, I think it took 5,000 men 10 years to build the temple. And even after Mansingh died in 1614, for another 100 years, Govinda was worshipped here. Pilgrims came from all over India. It was a center of worship for Krishna. Until one day, on the seventh floor, you'll notice these pictures, there are only two stories. But there, I think, two or three stories. There had been four more stories. And from his palace in Agra, which was it's an hour's ride by train, so it's like 60 or 70 kilometers. Aurangzeb, the Muslim zealot, he saw this light burning in the sky, and it seemed higher than his own palace. So he asked, "What is that light burning there?" And they said, "That's the Krishna temple in Mathura." And he said, "Smash it down. No Hindu god is going to have a higher building than my palace." So they learned, you know, that the soldiers were coming, and what they did was they took the deity. And they took the deity. By this time, the grandson of Mansingh, Jai Singh, had built his own city called Jaipur. And he took this deity to Jaipur for its own safety. And this is the temple. You can see the arches there are the palace of Jai Singh. And he could look from his palace. He could look through a tunnel there. And the back part is the temple that he built for Govindaji. So he could just look out the back, his back window, his back porch, and he would see Govindaji. That palace is called Chandra Mahal. Now, incidentally, while Aurangzeb's soldiers were smashing the Govindaji temple, they got four stories down, there were three stories left, and there began to be a huge rumbling, and clouds and storms and everything gathered, and they got scared, and they ran away. So that's why they didn't smash it to the ground, but because the temple was desecrated, no, according to our code, no future worship was ever able to be enacted there. So Govindaji was brought to the city of Amber, which is right near Jaipur, by Maharaj Jai Singh II, to protect the deity from destruction at the hands of the Muslim emperor about 1728, some people say 1735. Maharaj Jai Singh celebrated his city of victory, that's what Jai means, city of Jaipur, and Pur means place, Jai means victory, as a dedicating to Lord Govindaji. The temple is in a garden of the palace complex, and when the temple doors were opened, Maharaj Jai Singh in the past could see his beloved deity from the royal quarters. Jai Singh's grandfather had originally constructed the Govindaji temple in Vrindavan. So the city was actually dedicated. It was actually founded and dedicated to Govindaji. And this is the deity. He's quite large, actually, probably about three feet tall or so. And the first time we went to Jaipur, we went in the evening, we got darshan, and there were hundreds and thousands of people, and everyone said, "You got to come to Mangalarti, you got to come to..." So next day we showed up at Mangalarti, and there was like hundreds and thousands of people chanting and dancing and worshiping Govindaji. It was wonderful. Later on, a few years later, we went back, and we were so excited, we'd go to Mangalarti. We went there, and there weren't the thousands of people. There were hundreds of people, but there weren't thousands of people. So we said, "What happened? We were here so many years ago, and there were thousands of people, and now there's hundreds of people." They said, "What happened?" "Oh, since you were here last time, television has come to Jaipur." This is in the 70s. So people started staying up late watching TV and then they couldn't get to Mangalarti. That's a familiar story. So Radha Govinda deity from Vrindavan is until today the heart of the city of Jaipur. That's another picture of the Lord on his altar there. There's one story about Rupa Goswami. He wanted to offer a feast to his brother, whose birthday was coming up, but he had no means. He was a renunciate. And then he just kind of put the thought out of his mind. Lo and behold, a young village girl came with all kinds of preparations, and she said, "You know, my mother made this, and it's all left over, and so why don't I just give it to you?" And Rupa Goswami says, "Well, what a coincidence. You know, I was just thinking I'd like to offer some nice things to my brother." So when Sanatan came, Rupa Goswami had this whole picnic laid out. Sanatan said, "Where did you get, you don't have any money, you don't have any resource." He said, "A little girl came," and then Sanatan said, "That was Radharani. You took service from Radharani." See, our mood is to give service, not to take service. You took service from Radharani. And then there are two other instances also where Sanatana, being so much absorbed in Ras, in his relationship with Krishna, forgot his external surroundings. And one time, he was sitting chanting, and there was a tiger, because he was sitting right near water, and animals come to drink. So he was sitting there, and he was chanting, and a tiger had come right up beside him to drink the water. And he wasn't even aware of it. But it was noted by some of the residents that Krishna had placed himself between Rupa Goswami and the tiger. Krishna himself had come and stood between the tiger and Rupa Goswami, just to case. And then a third instance, also one time Rupa Goswami was chanting, and it gets very hot. It gets cold in Vrindavan in the winter, it gets very hot in the summer, like 120 sometimes. So he was chanting, he had no hat, he would have been burned to a crisp, and he wasn't even aware of it. And Radharani was seen standing, holding her sari over him, providing shade. So sometimes he was accepting inadvertently service from Radha and Krishna. Rupa Goswami had many skills. In Kartik, in 1542, Rupa, knowing Jiva Goswami was the younger generation, he was the son of Anupama, who was Rupa and Sanatana's brother who died. So he was their nephew, and he was the last Goswami to come. And Rupa Goswami knew that he wanted a deity to worship. And so Rupa Goswami, as well as being a poet, he carved this little 8-inch high deity of Damodar in order to give it to Jiva Goswami. And that deity was installed in the Radha Damodar temple. And guess who lived here for, I don't know, what, 7 or 9 years left? Guess who lived right here, preparing to go to America, start the Krishna Conscious Mission? A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. After he retired from family life in Delhi, he came and he negotiated a modest rent and he lived in the guest quarters at the Radha Damodar temple for many years while he was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he was commuting back and forth to Delhi at that time. So Rupa's final days are described as follows. His brother Sanatana passed away in 1554. Rupa Goswami did the funeral ceremonies for his brother Sanatana. Then he went into his samadhi, his bhajan, and he never came out. He just went in and he was chanting, and then he passed away from his mortal body 1 month later. So the difference in contribution between the two brothers was that Sanatana Goswami, he gave a systematic philosophy of bhakti. Lord Chaitanya had instructed him for a month on one thing, and that was the philosophy of bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami on another thing, which was the doctrine of rasa. Rasa means mellow or relish that we get with the Lord, and it starts with faith, and then it starts with giving up unwanted things, and it goes through association with devotees, attachment, and taste, and ecstasy, and then finally Krishna praying. So this is his samadhi mandir. This is where his body is laid, and as you know, ordinary people are cremated. If you had a country as densely populated as India, you couldn't afford the land to have graveyards. I was giving a class today, and I said to the kids, I said, can you imagine what it would be like if there was as many people in America as there are in India, if it was as densely populated? And I said, here's a way you can imagine. Imagine if there were twice as many people in America as there are now. Twice as many. And then imagine if there's three times as many. Then four times as many. Five times as many. Well, if you had 15 times as many people as in America as you do now, that would give you some idea of how crowded it is in India. So it's got to be an extraordinary circumstance when someone's buried. Most people are going to just get burned, you know, and recycle. But saintly people are an example, because if everybody lived like they lived, there'd be no abuse, there'd be no excess consumerism, there'd be no wars. Everybody would live peacefully. The planet could support, you know, billions and billions and trillions of people who would live in peace. So if there's one type of body that shouldn't be burned, it's a solution rather than part of the problem, then it's that of saintly people. And when they bury a saintly person, they build a little memorial over there, and it's called a samadhi mandir. And oftentimes you can go in that or go near there, and there'll be a set of beads on display that very same person used to chant on, and then you can sit right outside and chant your rounds also. It's very inspiring. These are some of his works, which were too many to count. Remember, we told the story last week about Rupa Goswami. They didn't have printing presses in those days. They just had palm leaves to write on. So he would write page one, and then he would let it dry. Rather than turning it over and smearing the ink, he'd write page one, and then he'd write page three, by which time page one would have dried. He'd turn it on, and then he'd write page two, and then turn and write page four. So in this way, he just wrote countless, countless works. And to do that, you're not composing. You're full of realization. You're being dictated to by Krishna. There's no hesitation. There's no, should I use this word or should I use that word? It's just like a flow. One of his works is called Hamsa Duda. We're just mentioning a few here. And it's a swan messenger to Mathura about lovelorn Radha. Radha sees a swan. She's missing Krishna. He's gone to Mathura. He's left Vrindavan. So she asks the swan, can you go and give a message to Krishna? And it's just like heartrending, the things that she says to the swan. And then another one is Uddhava Shamdesha. Again, Uddhava. Then Krishna sends Uddhava to Vrindavan to represent him with the gopis. And then the gopis give messages to Uddhava to take back to Krishna. And then Dana Keli Kamudi is a one-act play. The one that we know the best is the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or the Nectar Devotion by Srila Rupa Goswami. In there, all the mellows, all the rasas are elaborately discussed and ample examples are given. What Rupa did, he went through all the scriptures and he categorized all the instances and all the interplay of love between Krishna's devotee, and he broke it down into parental, servitorship, neutrality, friendship, and conjugal love. And he gave examples, and then he broke it into subcategories, sub-mellows. Very scientific, the way they categorized everything. Another work is Ujvala Nilamani, Madhurya, Lagu Bhagavadamrita, and then Upadeshamrita is also another work. It has to do with the courtesy and protocol that devotees share with each other, revealing one's mind, giving and receiving gifts, and so on and so forth. It's called the Nectar of Instruction. So there's a little overview, and I think we're right on, spot on time. Srila Rupa Goswami, the brother of Sanatan, the second of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan. Next week we'll talk about Raghunath Bhatt, Gopal Bhatta, and then we'll finish up with Raghunath Das and Jiva Goswami.